What's up, guys? This is Uriah Faber, the California Kid, here with Greg Conley, serial entrepreneur, founder of Trifecta Nutrition. We're talking about everything under the sun, fitness, entertainment, and of course, business, making that money.
It's Rashid. Rashid. What is, do you know the origins of that?
It's like Northern African, Aramaic, Arabic, that whole area.
Huh.
It means rightly guided path.
Okay. What's up, guys? Welcome to the CaliCast. I'm here, Greg Conley, my co-host.
What's up,
guys?
We've
got a very special guest today. This man is a savage. He covers a lot of ground as an athlete, as a businessman, and kind of an outward thinker. He's thinking above and beyond in everything he does, which is awesome. That's what we love. That's why we're here to talk today with Mike Rashid.
What's up?
We're getting to the bottom of this name, Rashid. What's the origins of the name?
Like Northern African, Arabic, and it just means rightly guided path.
Rightly guided path.
Right.
Sounds very appropriate.
So Rashid, Rashad, if you were in that area, it would sound like Rashid. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
So it's a bunch of different. See, in other parts of the world, there's no right way to spell things.
Right.
Because our letters are so different and the characters are different. So it's all transliterations.
Interesting.
And things change, and you know what I mean?
Well, hey, you're making that name famous, so let's talk about that a little bit. I know, you know, part of why we're doing this cast is to get motivation from folks that are leaders in their industry, want to kind of hear your story. We just talked outside of this room, and there's all sorts of cool business stuff that you're doing. Thinking out, you know, I like guys that have an opportunity, see a vision and want to take control and be the guy that makes things happen. And this fight that you have coming up is one of them. So before we get into that, just kind of give us an overview of you know, your story. You're a guy that's done some boxing, done some bodybuilding, done some powerlifting, and built an awesome brand. You're a YouTuber, which I think is the most interesting part of the business so far, and that's lending itself to all sorts of different things. So what's your, kind of your story? How'd you grow up?
Yeah, I'm from Brooklyn, New York. Man, I got my life was like a movie, like literally, man. Like,
who has the rights to it right now? Just you?
Just me, man. Just
okay, because we're getting into that industry, so
yeah, no doubt. And basically, you know, born in Brooklyn. My grandparents were immigrants. My grandmother was from Trinidad and Tobago. She and her parents came through to America through Ellis Island. My grandfather is from the Dominican Republic. He and his parents came through Ellis Island. So that was pretty cool having that. In New York, you ever go to New York, man, New York has all the entire world, every culture in its purest form. So you grew up around a lot of culture. So that was cool. So basically,
yeah, they call it like a mesh pot, right? There's all sorts of different little pockets where folks are kind of, you know, using the resources of people from their home countries, et cetera.
Right, in its purest form.
Right.
Like, there's no Taco Bell. It's no, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
So it's to me, it's the greatest city on the planet. I don't want to live there right now. I love it. I love the West Coast. I've been on the West for years. But it's just an awesome place. You know what I mean? And you grow up fast out there. You know, you talk to a kid that's 11, they have a personality of a 30-year-old, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I've got a lot of friends from Jersey, and my one buddy, Sir Studboy, he has his own podcast, but I said, what's the biggest difference between like New Jersey and California? He's like, just personality. Like, we have it, you guys don't. I don't know if I agree with that, but there are some colorful characters from that side
of
the U.S.
I think Cali got a lot of personality. It's just different. See, on the East Coast, it's overly populated.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of people here too, but it's a lot of land. Mm-hmm. Like in New York is dense, is everybody on top of each other. So you got to speak loud, speak fast, be effective. You know what I mean? Just cut through the shit. So everything is competitive. You know what I mean? Like when I was growing up, I played every sport on the playground.
Yeah.
On gravel, no grass, football, baseball, every track,
that's
everything.
Kinda wild. Mm-hmm.
So you scrape your knees, all of that. You know, that was normal. You know, handball. So, but anyway, I had a very colorful childhood. My mother, you know, my mother and father wasn't together. My mother was with the biggest drug dealer in New York City.
Oh, wow.
You know what I'm saying? So we was literally rich. We was super rich growing up. And then that shit catches up. He got killed, you know, and then all of the money start fading,
away. Were you aware of that as a kid?
Oh,
you knew what was up? Or did you just think, nah, we're...
Nah, I seen things that a kid shouldn't see, and I was aware of things that a kid shouldn't be aware of, right? So
that's crazy.
But I'm thankful for those experiences because it just gave me different perspectives of life, and I appreciate things, you know what I mean? And even though going through all of that stuff, I still had a good childhood,
right?
You know what I mean? Because I had my grandparents, and when my mother, when things were getting too hard for her, you know, my grandparents came in, and that was like the best part of my childhood. And then my dad was incarcerated, and he got out, and then me and him developed our relationship. And as I got a little older, I moved out west to be with my dad, and that was the best thing for me because he taught me how to be a man.
So he was incarcerated, but in your opinion, when he got out, he got his shit straight and was a good role model for you?
Absolutely.
That doesn't always happen. That's kind of cool. Mm-hmm.
See, this is the thing, man. Like, everybody go through things in life. Some people will get into a fight with life and might get beat up and might just stay down.
Right.
My dad didn't. You know, he fought back. He kept his head up. One thing that he always taught me that I carry with me to this day is he always said, you don't build character when everything is good.
Right.
You build character when things are not good. He said, son, that's when you keep your head up, you smile more, treat people kind. That's how you develop character, because we all gonna deal with shit.
Yep.
But it's how you deal with it. That's when you develop character. He's a living example of that. And you know, I've been through some very truculent things as well, and nothing killed me. They actually made me better. You know what I mean? So, you know, life is good, man.
Yeah.
Life is good. I love it.
I love hearing that. And I mean, we've had a couple different guests on, and I keep seeing with these super successful self-made people, we see the same things: getting knocked down, getting back up, having bad influences. I mean, how easy would it have been to see your mom with the biggest drug dealer in NYC and be like, oh man, I want to have those nice things. I want to be, you know, on the side of extreme wealth, even though it's not the right thing to do.
I did that.
And you did a little bit of that.
I did that. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And seeing your father go down and have some troubles and then regain composure and smile more out of it. You know, it's kind of telling, like, you saw a lifestyle that is what you want. You want wealth. You want to live a good life. But deciding how you're going to get it is a different story. So you had some rough times too, where you're making some bad decisions, I take it?
Yeah. I had, like, for the most part, my childhood was smooth. It was good. Despite all the chaos around me, it was like I was protected. You know what I'm saying? I was always like valedictorian, straight A student, the whole nine. School was easy for me, and I loved school. I loved learning. And I also started boxing when I was like 12 at a young age. So that kind of kept me away from the crowds and the typical shit that everybody's doing at school, because boxing wasn't a school sport, right?
Right.
So I was kind of an outsider in that sense, and I was in a chess club, so that was even weirder, you know what I'm saying?
Don't say that. We're going to have to put down a little chess competition.
I'm a little rusty, but I be playing on my phone, so, you know what I mean?
I've got you walk in my house on my table, I got a chess set right there, and then up in my room, I got a chess set. I'm not the greatest, but I love a challenge.
Nah, I love it too, man.
About to get into one of those.
Hell yeah, I'm down. So, when I got older, you know, I would fight, you know what I mean? And every time I would take time off, when I come back, it would be so much harder.
You're talking about boxing, right? Amateur boxing.
Yeah.
Right.
And everybody wanted me to go pro. Yeah, I was good. And I was behind.
I saw a clip of you. How old are you in that clip you showed us?
12.
Maybe we can get that, Jason. Maybe we can get a little clip of some of these 12-year-olds mics throwing down. Yeah. It's pretty impressive. He's not quite as buff as he was back then.
I thought I was,
the fighting spirit.
Yeah, I thought I was. That's the funny thing. But, so every time I would come back, it would be so much harder, you know what I mean, to get my endurance back. And I would lose to guys that I was way better than because I wasn't in shape, and I'm in there trying to knock them out, and I'm tiring myself out. So, you know, I was seeing other opportunities. Like, you're a pro, you're one of the best, so you know it's a hard life. You know what I mean?
It's a rough way to make a living.
Yeah, and when you're 19, 20, you like, fuck this.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I really wanted it. But at the time, I seen other potential opportunities, and I would try things, and then I started making money doing the wrong things, and it kind of like, I was like, fuck it, I'm gonna keep doing this. I'm making money. This is what I wanted to do anyway. And this was as an adult. It wasn't in my childhood. I never did anything wrong when I was a kid. It was when I was adult. I was a risk taker.
Right.
So I was doing stuff, and shit was working out for me. You know what I mean?
You know, it's crazy. If you look at some of the most accomplished rappers in the game, mm-hmm. and a lot of the fighters also, I mean, how do guys make a living until they make it? In every different industry, it's different. Right. I mean, I've got guys that live off their chicks. I've got guys that work jobs. I got guys that have probably done some stuff that's illegal. I've got guys that find a way until they can make a way.
Right.
Right. And yeah. it's always interesting to me. I mean, there's ways to do it above the water and below the water as far as the law goes. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the guys that will have success will find ways to have success, and that can take a lot of different forms.
It don't matter. Somebody posted a meme and said, if there was no Instagram, a lot of y'all wouldn't be shit. And I'm like, that's not true.
No. Mm-hmm.
Because everybody's trying to be something on Instagram, right? People, if there was no Instagram, people like and respect and follow would still be in those positions.
Absolutely. Whatever in some way, shape, or form.
In some way, exactly.
And I think people don't realize there's a lot of work to maintain all that too.
Yeah,
I mean, you were talking about Mike being a YouTuber. I've obviously, you know, known Mike for years at this point, mm-hmm. and the amount of videos and content and, you know, photo shoots and all of that to keep it like active and relevant.
Yeah, creativity.
I mean, you're constantly having to be creative and create new content all the time, which, you know, I think most people just don't appreciate. They think there's just a camera and you're just like, oh, what's up?
It's not like the draw on anything.
Yeah, exactly.
It costs. Like all my videos I pay for, you know what I'm saying? I pay somebody to record, edit, mm-hmm. and I always have, you know what I mean? So, you know, people will complain if I have something for sale or, oh, he's fucking charge everybody. I'm like, bro, all these free training videos and advice and this, that, and the third is, I pay for these videos for you to watch for free.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Can I live? You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. No, people are funny. And look, success is success. Whether it's like, oh, just because of this or just because of that. Or, I mean, I've got a kid on my team, for example, Joseph Morales. We had him on the show already. And he was with me since he's 9 years old. And he's now 23. He's 10-0. He's fighting in the UFC in Brazil here in 2 weeks. And he pops on the scene, and people are like, oh, this new guy. Like, they don't see 9 years old to 23.
Right.
The almost quitting because he can't make a living and working a job, getting up at 4:30 in the morning and all these things. They see a guy on TV that's with one of the best teams. Oh, he's, you know, one of the guys in the teams. And that's lucky. The same for guys that have success. If you're having success in any area, internet sensations or YouTubers or Instagram famous folks, I mean, there's method to the madness. It's not just like, oh, they just popped up and it's lucky. People are intelligent. They know how to jockey. They surround themselves with the right people. They understand people. They understand how to put things together. It's impressive when anybody has success in any area. It just happens to be, you know, one of the platforms that matters right now.
I agree. So I'm taking my first pro fight next month, and I'm co-promoting the fight. And I was like, I did a little bit of research before I even.
You're co-promoting. I don't know if people know how cool that is. Basically, you could either go get paid, or you can figure out the system and the backside of how you're actually going to get paid.
Mm-hmm.
And what did that look like? How did you make that decision from, hey, I'm going to take a fight. It's been 10 years. I'm going to take a fight. And how did you decide I'm going to take the bull by the horns and become the boss in this situation?
So I was telling you earlier, I was just talking with a friend about, what if I turn pro? What do you think? You know, and my son, Elijah, Mr. Junior Alpha, he fights. And he's good, man. He's fucking good. So he's sitting there ear hustling, and he's like, do it, do it, do it.
Ear hustling.
So
like
I
that.
Said, so I asked him. I said,
I'm stealing that too.
I said, you want me to fight? You want me to do it? He said, yes. I said, all right, I'm gonna do it. So when I get my word, I gotta do it. So.
Accountability.
Exactly. So I started asking around, I talked to one promoter, and she was like, oh man, you can see dollar signs in her eyes.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Because with your following, we can fill out the. I'm like, man, I'm going to do this myself. Like, I can do that, right? So I started doing the research, and it's not easy to promote a fight. So I was like, let me see if I can co-promote a fight with somebody. So I have a lot of friends in the business, like high level. So introduced me to different promoters. And I wasn't feeling the vibes with a lot of these guys. One guy, Thomas Lamana, shout out to Thomas Lamana. He's a welterweight. He's a top 10 rated welterweight. He'll be getting a world title soon, a title shot soon. He's really good. He actually is a promoter as well. So we talked about co-promoting a fight together. We came to an agreement, like, let's do it. It's actually a smooth process. a lot of it is a lot of like business stuff and paperwork and all this back and forth shit that's annoying because I just want to train.
Yeah.
But I understand my position, so I got to handle the business too. So, but I'm making it happen. Like, right. If I got to run at night, it don't matter. I'm going to just get it in. So, as we're going through it, I was like, I'm doing the math. And I see, okay, we're going to make some money, but it's not a lot of money.
You're talking about the live event portion.
Right.
Right.
So, I was like,
you're like, yeah, you can fit, you know, we got a venue, 1,000 people. Yeah, this is exactly what we're going to cost. This is how much we're paying the fighters, right. You know, the overhead, the, you know, all mm-hmm. that stuff. And you're like, all right,
exactly.
The money, not quite what you want.
Right. So I decided, you know what? Let's do pay-per-view, you know?
Yeah.
I had a good friend of mine. I said, yo, I'll break you in on this if you can do the research and handle the technical side and we all eat, you know? He said, cool. He's been handling it and it's all set up. I actually had a landing page and a website built finished yesterday.
Oh, nice.
And
what is it so we can send our folks?
It's called alphaacademypromotions.com.
Okay.
alphaacademypromotions.com.
It's Alpha. I like the name Alpha.
Yes, yes. I do too. Like, I respect people that are confident. And we live in a society to where it's looked at bad if you're confident,
right,
and secure and you're a leader. Like, why?
You gotta wear it.
You gotta wear it. It's not for everybody, and that's okay.
Yeah.
But don't shit on other people for being confident. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So anyway, so we set up the pay-per-view, and that's it. Really, when I do something, I really want to do it. I don't want to be just a participant.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, and I got people that follow me, and I'm always giving them advice, this and the third. And I try to give them the best advice that I can, and I try to lead by example. And I got sons, so I'm showing them, yo, Pops is a boss. Like,
yep.
This is a story they could tell, because I'm 40, bro.
Are you?
Yeah.
Oh,
so
man.
They'd be like, yo, my dad turned pro at 40.
That's crazy,
bro. You know what I'm saying?
That's a motor. That's a little story for them to take home. One of the things that you said that I always talk about, and I see it with Greg also, you know, Greg's an entrepreneur, and what that means is there's no set day and hour. It's not clock in here, clock in there. It's putting out fires, thinking thing outside the box. You know, how many times we have conversations late at night or early in the morning when most people have clocked out. And that's what you said. Look, I would like to just focus on the training, but that's not the way you get paid. What do? You sleep less, you work more, you get more resourceful, you delegate. I can appreciate wanting to take the bull by the horns. I've been a guy that's done the same thing. When I first started in the fight game, there wasn't like a set path. There was no weight class for me. 2003, there was no, there's three events a year. There was, you know, Indian reservations is illegal in California. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, I was like, all right, I'm going to figure this thing out. And I've kind of taken that same approach, make our own path.
Right.
I'm hearing the same thing. And the truth is, I talk to my guys all the time. You know, I get guys that complain about money, about time, about this and about that. You sleep how many hours a night? I try to get at least 5, sometimes 7 if I can get 5 to 7 hours. Work out as a professional, you can work out 3 to 5 hours a day. You got 7 hours, you got 5 hours. That's 12 hours done from training and sleeping. You eat a little bit, then what are you using the rest of the time for? A guy like you is hustling. You're doing your YouTube. You've got your business. You got your time to train. You've got promotions. You're figuring out people to do the things you don't want to do. That in itself is already a victory. Now, whether you make a dollar out of it, you're going to learn for the next time. It can either hit big or it can be a lesson. But you know, just taking that initiative is like going to school.
Right, right. See, the beauty with this is now I'm a risk taker and I plant seeds. So I understand that if I invest in some, my money, my time, my efforts in something, it's a chance that I might not see nothing out of that until next year.
Absolutely.
And I'm okay with that. There's things that I've done that I didn't make any money. There's things that I've lost money. But this one in particular happened to be one where I'm already making money. So I'm like,
yeah,
like the venue is sold out. There's nice. A few seats left. We sold a bunch of pre-sale pay-per-view yesterday. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
And today.
How does that work? Maybe go ahead and finish and maybe you can explain that a little bit more.
Yeah, so this, I calculated it so well. I think things, I'm a chess player like you.
Yeah.
So I think things a few steps in advance.
Right.
And I look at one of my favorite books is 48 Laws of Power by Robert Greene. So he gives a law, then he gives a counter to that law. Some laws, law meaning in his book is 48 laws.
What's it called? It's by 48
Laws of Power.
Okay.
By Robert Greene.
Gotcha.
So some of these laws It's just giving you different tactics. What it is a tactic of gaining power, right? And then it gives you a historical account of it, right? And then a breakdown of it. And then if there's a reversal to it, it'll break that down too, so you know how to watch out for that. But some laws don't have a reversal. It's just flawless. Huh. But when the way I looked at this, it was flawless. Like, it was no way I wasn't gonna make money, right? So that's making money. I'm good with that. But how I did it, like, well, how I'm doing it now, I'm really big on marketing. Marketing is everything with any kind of business. We see that in the fight game. So what I'm doing is with the pay-per-view, yesterday, this is a preemptive strike of marketing. It's not a big, because we're going to do the YouTube videos, we're going to do it big. But beforehand, once I got everything up and running, make sure all the bugs were fixed. So I did just an Instagram story and a Snapchat post, like, yo, if y'all want, I know not everybody can make it out to New Jersey to come to the fight, but if y'all want to support it and watch it on pay-per-view, I'm going to give y'all a discount code special just for y'all. But DM me, and I'm going to send you a personal message, myself, and I'm going to give you the code and all of that. So
nice,
you guys,
smart.
My boy Jamie, all day yesterday, I'm responding to everybody.
People love that.
And all day today until the 24 hours when it expires. So I'm like, cool. We made good money already in 24 hours. You know what I'm saying?
That's crazy.
And you got to think, the bulk of the sales is probably going to come the day before the fight.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I got 6 more weeks to fucking push this. That's exciting
to daily,
me.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much how it goes. You know what I mean? With the pay-per-view stuff. So
and then you found the best deal. This is going to be an online thing, so they can order it on their phone. They can order it through their
laptop. Yeah, they can order it.
Tablet.
They order it. They get the thing. The confirmation comes in their email. They can watch it wherever they can stream video. TV, smart TV. Everybody has smart TV now. PlayStation, Xbox One, phone, iPad.
I'll be getting that fight.
Hell yeah, that's what's up. We just have a fight party over here.
Yeah,
at headquarters. You know what I mean? So, but yeah, it's cool, man. Like, I love. See, and you were mentioning like how I did some bodybuilding, some powerlifting, all of that stuff. That stuff was so unfulfilling to me. You know what I mean? When I first did bodybuilding shows, I would be backstage, like, staring at people, like, trying to intimidate people. Because I'm like, it's a competition, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's all I knew. Not like I was trying to be a tough guy, but when I'm in competition mode, I'm in competition mode, right?
Yeah. So, ever seen Pumping Iron with Schwarzenegger?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so funny, man. That's He's getting in people's heads and everything.
I love that. That's Muhammad Ali. You know, that's Mike Tyson, getting your head. You're done before you even get out there. You know what I'm saying?
Conor McGregor has been great at that also.
Oh, yeah, man. I love Conor.
Yeah.
Conor gets it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
He's Conor, a businessman.
Wasn't at one point you and Conor supposed to fight?
It's a funny story. So Conor and I coached the reality show together,
mm-hmm.
and they said we're not going to fight, and we were both pushing to fight each other.
Right.
I was trying to drum up some hype to get that fight because it's a big money fight.
Right.
We actually had a debate on the show about how he was trying to fight me and I was trying to fight him, and Dana White saying it's not going to happen. So I'm like, whatever. It made for us to become buddies on the show on top of being competitors
because
they're saying we're not going to fight. So I get a call like literally 2 days or like 2 days after his fight fell out with, I think it was Dos Anjos. Dos Anjos had hurt himself. He wasn't going to have the fight. And I get a call from Dana who's like, hey, man, I told you it wasn't going to happen, but, like, want you to fight Conor. Want you to get this opportunity. You're going to make more money doing this fight than any other fight and blah, 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 all this stuff. And at the time, I had a hurt rib, but I was like,
fuck it, I'm going to pop it back
in. Yeah, it was 2.5 weeks.
It's worth it.
It's 2.5 weeks, and he was offering me this amount of money. And I'm like, let me go to the gym. I said, all right, I could do this. I said, I'm in. I'll do the fight. He told me the money, and it was going to be at 155. I'm a 35-pounder. Mm. It was going to be at 155. It was at 2.5 weeks' notice, and I was fighting Conor McGregor. And I'm like, yeah, fuck it. Let's do it.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So then he's like, okay, well, I just want to see if you're in. I want you to have this opportunity and this and that. Which I know how these guys roll. I mean, there had to be a backstory to this. And I'm the guy that's friends with everybody in the industry. So – you know, there's Anthony Pettis, there's Cowboy Cerrone, there's Frankie Edgar, there's Nate Diaz, Jose Aldo. I know how to get a hold of all these guys. I go at their phone numbers and can get a hold of them. And so I start doing my research, and Nate had told them basically to F off because they wanted to extend him to an 8-fight contract, and he didn't want to take the one cash deal because it was going to extend him to 8. So he told them F you, and they're like, well, this we're not going to offer you this again. And he's like, well, fuck you, basically is what Nate told
him. He probably literally said that.
Yeah, he did. He said, no, fuck you, motherfuckers, yeah. Right? And then Frankie Edgar was injured. I called his folks. He was injured. Anthony Pettis had asked for the fight, but he was on a 2-fight losing streak. Cowboy Cerrone had accepted, but he already lost to Dos Anjos, and Connor said that he didn't want to fight him because he was a pussy or something like that. And then Jose Aldo couldn't take the fight either because it was too short a notice. He didn't want to do that. So it came down to me and Nate for the fight, and Dan is telling me you're my guy. I want you to take the fight. This is a big opportunity. I'm like, all right, let's do it. You know, I could do a pull up. My rib was good, and my plan was to get it to the ground anyways.
Right.
And then so I actually go to Vegas 2 days later, and right when I land in Vegas, he's like, hey man, Connor really wants to fight Nate, and so Connor chose to fight Nate, and that was the fight that he lost. So it wasn't like it was actually going to happen necessarily. It wasn't signed or anything like that, but it was down to Nate and I for that fight, and Connor wanted to fight Nate, which backfired. So
I feel like that would have been – I feel like, personally, you and Connor would have been a bigger fight than Connor and Nate.
But, you know, I think in my opinion for here's Connor. He's smart. How did he play that fight with Nate? He says he fought a guy that was – you know, way bigger than him.
Yeah.
But Nate's the same weight. He's a 55-pounder. He just they took it at 170.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it would have been a bad look for Connor to fight me, who's two weights below him, on 2.5 weeks' notice. And really, my strength, I've got the most submissions in all the history of WC, Pride, and UFC. I've got the most.
Right.
And his weakness is he got tapped to a knee bar, and he got choked twice. All of his losses have been submissions.
Right.
So, I mean, it would have been a bad calculated risk for him to lose to me versus a guy that's bigger and slower and is a stand-up guy also, you know?
I get that.
So it was smart for him, even though it backfired.
He ended up getting choked anyway. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like he wanted to get choked. He was tired. Yeah,
he got rocked.
He's like, yo, go ahead and finish this. Go ahead. Yo, I think I've always... Like, I was a fan of I am a fan of Connor. I like Connor. Yeah. I like the persona, and I like how he fights. I actually think, like, you know, I'm a boxer, so I'm like, yo, box more. Because I feel like if he is certain
he made that
simple
dough.
Things, it's some simple things that he adjusts, he can be effective. Because him switching his stance, it will confuse a lot of guys.
Yeah.
It's so, like,
what do you think, from your opinion, was Floyd playing possum with him, or was he really a little bit confused?
I got to give him the breakdown. Give him the breakdown.
Yeah. It was a tactic.
Yeah.
It's done all the time.
Like
so,
a rope-a-dope.
Yeah. Yep. Ali invented that. What Floyd did, Google the fight, Muhammad Ali versus Ron Lyle. He did the exact same thing.
Right.
And what Floyd, I know a lot of people, bro. So he didn't really train. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He was just in shape already, like how he normally is in shape.
He doesn't have to train as, I mean, you stay ready, you don't have to get ready.
But when he's in fight shape, it's different. Like, he's in there sparring people like Errol Spence, like chillers. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I met him in Texas. Huh?
He's a bad boy.
He's a badass.
Would you see, like, when the media stuff with him at his gym is not his real stuff?
Yeah.
He got a gym at his house where... You know what I mean? And
he puts in
one
work.
Thing I respect about him, he takes those young lions and they work. But anyway, he didn't do that. So he wasn't in shape for a real rough fight. You know what I'm saying? So Muhammad Ali said, I'm gonna rope a dope this guy, right? And if that don't work, because they just see me rope a dope George Foreman, I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna put my guard up and I'm gonna just keep walking to him. He has no choice but to keep punching me. Trying to hit me.
Right.
And I'm going to make him tired. After around the fifth round, he'll be tired, and I'm going to knock him out. He said it. Ali talked so much that people didn't know what to believe. Or he just talked, predicting rounds and all of this stuff. And he literally went in there and did it.
Yeah.
Ali walked exactly what you seen Floyd do with Connor. It was the same thing. It's a tactic. So, yeah, when I was watching it, I was like, don't do it, bro. Like, Connor, like...
Connor was like, I'm going to tee off, boom, hitting
but
all
see,
these
this
combos,
the thing,
switching stance, and Floyd's rolling with the punches.
So here's another thing. So All right, we're speaking of Errol Spence. I like talking fight stuff with people that know what's up. So Errol Spence is a guy who can punch through your guard, right? This guy, when you know how to punch, you can punch. If somebody, this is not good defense, you know? Or Floyd knew that Connor didn't know how to really turn over the shots. If Connor did, he could have. Floyd wouldn't have fought like that. You know what I mean?
Errol Spence. Yep. I got a chance. This is a good, before you finish this, I got a chance to go in just randomly. I was in Texas and I met somebody that knew Errol Spence. Her dad was a trainer, and he's like, I got to go in and watch Spence spar. That dude's bad, man. He's bad, and he had an Olympic hopeful that was a 200-pound guy to spar him because, and he's what weight is he?
47.
He's 147. So he took an Olympic level boxer who is now pro and did all of his rounds with that guy because that's what he needed in order to get a push.
Right.
And the kid was good, man. Yeah. And Errol was fucking killing him.
Yeah, he's going to be the next big thing. Yeah. So now if Connor, all right. So when I watched. Now, I like Connor.
Yeah.
So I'm not, this is not biased at all.
Right.
When I watch Connor walking through people in the UFC, I tell people all the time, Connor knows how to box.
Yeah.
And he's using his high distance. High-level boxer. He's using, I wouldn't say that.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to tell you why. For MMA, yeah.
Yeah.
But he knows distance. He's good at it, great at it. And he's calm, he's poised. He's not aggressive and crazy. That doesn't work. So he counters people like that easy, right? So, and like when he fought Jose Aldo, like guy just rushing and it's like,
yeah, he got Aldo pissed, man.
He's like, don't do that. Don't do that. You're a professional. But anyway, I guess people got to understand that the boxing or MMA, it's not a fight. It's a sport.
Right.
You got to have your mind intact and be calculative. You know what I mean? So when I watched him at his media day, Connor, I was like, all right. I'm watching him hit the bag, right? And I'm thinking, okay, he's just pity-patting because whatever, right?
Right.
But when he fought, he did the same thing.
Right.
He wasn't sitting down on shots, turning over on shots. Now, I understand in MMA, you got to watch check kicks or kick. You know what I mean? Right. It's different. It's
a little taken into account.
Right. But I would have assumed in his training camp, he would be sparring with his feet planted, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Being able to sit down on shots because it's a million times harder when you do. And he didn't do that in that fight. I was like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So
I mean, I can appreciate this. So first off, Floyd has never lost.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going against a bigger guy, which he's gone against bigger guys.
Yeah, he always does. Everybody he fights is bigger than him.
Yeah, if I hadn't seen the Canelo fight, I would have given a better chance to Connor to finish that fight. But Canelo's very, very good, high-level boxer. And I was like, okay, he's younger, he's heavier, he's a super skilled boxer, he's got some unique stuff. I thought that
everybody
was a chance.
Everybody thought that was it. Yeah,
yeah, that was the one, right? And when he took care of that fight, Canelo, I was like, all right, man, this guy's legit. And then I started, you know, hoping and believing the hype because Connor's our guy. We got an MMA guy in the fight.
I get it.
And I'm watching it, and then, you know, we were watching the fight. I was actually at Rob Dyrdek's house, which was fun to watch out.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of folks that were hoping Floyd was gonna or Connor was gonna pull it off.
Right.
And Floyd, I wouldn't say that. I mean, he would have liked to finish that earlier, make a statement, etc. But Connor has a history of getting fatigued in fights. If you watch the Diaz fights, if you watch other fights, he gets fatigued. And Floyd, that's like a walk in the park doing 12 rounds. I mean, he's done this his whole life. He's the best at it. So when I saw a little bit of a fatigue set in, I was like, you know, Connor was doing some stuff to score points, etc. He landed a couple of uppercuts where Floyd maybe caught him off guard a little bit.
Yeah.
And this is the fight game. A punch on a human being on the right button at the right timing can put someone down. Yeah. I've seen Floyd get rocked before. We saw him. Yeah. I think
Shane Mosley.
And Madonna actually rocked him a little bit. He does a good job of recovering, but Connor's known to be able to knock guys out. So there was always that risk there. We're all hoping for it. But at the end of the day, when one guy is so poised and he's like a fish in water and the other guy is like a pretty good like Olympic-level swimmer versus a shark, when fatigue sets in a little bit, that's when you're going to see a big difference. That's what we saw.
Yeah.
Well, I thought Connor did a great job. represented our sport pretty well. Whether Floyd could have gone for the kill earlier or not, I mean, probably.
I don't think that that was in his – he had to – all right, so he was already getting – the boxing world was tearing him apart, Floyd. Because there's a lot of guys that thought that they deserved that shot.
Right.
But I kind of felt everybody, but then I was like, you know what? He's not – he's done. He's retired.
Yeah. So he's doing a favor to everybody coming out and
it's
entertaining.
It's an exhibition, really. Yeah. You know what I mean? I don't think it should have counted, honestly, but whatever.
Yeah.
It don't matter. Who gives a shit? But I was like, yeah, y'all stop fucking crying. He's done. Y'all gonna shine. But when the fight happened, like, I didn't think Conor had a chance against him, honestly. Right. And everybody that Floyd fights is bigger than him because he walks around at his fight.
Yeah, which is really impressive.
Everybody comes down. Everybody dies down.
For example, for those who don't understand, for me, I weigh in at 136, and I can get up to about 156, and then by fight time, about 153. Right. And that's what happens. Like Canelo, I think they weighed
like
in.
19 pounds.
It was a 19-pound difference from an in-ring Floyd Mayweather and Canelo, which is crazy. I mean, that's two weight classes, really.
But see, this is the thing. Like you seen Errol Spence sparring, you know, the big guy. That's the thing. Like, it irritates – well, my sport with boxing, what irritates me is guys will do these stupid catch weights, and they're crying about, oh, no, he's too big. He's, you know, it's the difference of the weight is 3 pounds, the division. When you're training, you fight guys 20 pounds, 30 pounds – you know what I mean? And honestly, the smaller guy, as long as you're
skilled defensively and offensively.
Small, in my opinion, a smaller guy has an advantage.
Big time.
Now, it's a little bit different as a heavyweight, right? And I'm going to tell you why. So I've never been one to cut weight, you know, when I used to fight. So but I was young. Everybody's young, you know. But now I was like, you know, I'm going to come down to cruiserweight 200. Like I told you earlier, I couldn't find an opponent at 200, so I got to fight a heavyweight, and there's no cap on the weight. So my opponent is 270, so I had to train with big guys. I do see the benefit of cutting now, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because the guys I was sparring with that was around my weight, it was easy.
Right.
The big guys I'm moving around with, their size is wearing me down. It's hard.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, the difference is in – and I saw today in sparring, we had Cody Garbrandt, and Cody came in as a favor to Josh Emmett to give him sparring rounds. And Cody's a world champion. He's also an amateur boxer, super decorated. He's sparred guys like Spence that level when he was an amateur, and he's seen those looks. And Josh Emmett is one of the most – he's ranked number 4 in the world at 155. And Cody came in, and because of his ability, it was him giving work to Emmett. And granted, Cody has the ability to be one of the best of all time, in my opinion. When he gets that belt back, he's, you know, a quick rise to the top. And he can, because of his defensive prowess and his skill set, he's able to stay safe against a much bigger guy because of like Spence. You know, he's going against a high-level guy, but he has the defense there, he has the footwork down, and you have a big advantage on speed. Speed and accuracy is massive in the fight game.
Yeah.
That's like one of the things that Conor's so good at. He can hang a guy up. A guy comes in, he can catch him.
Yeah.
And have the junction of his power with the other guy's weight and motion. So, I mean, you can see a defensively sound, poised guy. You know, it's apples for oranges. Who's bigger, who's stronger, who's faster? When the skill set's there, you know, it's easy. I have no problem fighting a bigger guy. Now, if you get caught clean on the chin against a bigger guy, are the chances of you getting knocked out higher? Sure. Are the chances of him catching you clean on the chin a lot less because he's slower? Absolutely. So it's apples for oranges when that happens. And I'm a guy that's fought. I fought 55s, I fought 45s, I fought 35s. And at the end of the day, a top-tier opponent, a world championship opponent, is a world championship opponent. It just the game plan changes, the skill set changes. So it's cool to see that. And it's like it's just like he's saying, like, you know, you're fighting different demons. If the guy's terrible and he's a heavyweight, you're going to mess him up. If he's really good in a heavyweight, it becomes a big disadvantage.
Yeah, because guys hit hard, man. Like, you know, I feel body shots for like 3 days. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, and I'm defensive minded. You know what I mean?
Right.
I'm not trying to get hurt.
Yeah.
I'm not. Look, I got a lot of people that's going to be watching me. I got a lot of haters. That's
yeah, they want to see you get beat up.
Wait,
those YouTube
not,
trolls.
You know, if you're not get, if you don't have haters, you're doing something wrong.
Right, right. But you know, so I, you know, and
Greg,
I got,
we got to get you some more haters, by the way.
I know.
I'm too light,
I'm light
out
on
there.
The haters.
Too much. But now I just, you know, so but I'm a thinker, man. You know, and I'm old school, so I like the science, the sweet science part.
Right.
I don't like just rock'em sock'em shit. That's not appealing to me. It's like I can see that in a bar. You know what I mean? I like tactician. I like when somebody gives somebody a masterclass ass whooping. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Just make them feel stupid. Just humiliate them. Because that ass whooping is worse. If you knock somebody out in the first, right, I hardly ever see that unless you beat them up and they stop it. I don't really care because you caught them, right? You didn't break them down. You didn't beat them up. You just caught them. But when you humiliate somebody and they can't do nothing with you, they're so frustrated.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just, it's punishment. Yeah. I'll come do this again. You know what I mean? It's punishment.
Let me ask you this from, and I know I've been different sizes during my fight camps and in different parts of my career. The muscle, you got a lot of muscle. Mm-hmm. And that can be a disadvantage. I mean, you see guys, Mike Tyson was pretty hubbed up and you know, Evander Holyfield was pretty rocked out. I mean, that was genetics. But a boxer body, a lot of times, lean and fluid is super important. Have you found that you had to downsize the muscle a little bit in your boxing prep?
Bro, I was 250 at first.
Wow.
When I started. Yeah. So
that's a lot of oxygen feeding the blood.
So when I first started back training for real, I was like, fuck, I don't know about this shit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But the more weight I lost or muscle mass I lost, I don't lift anymore. I'm going to lift after my fight.
Right.
I like how it looked. You know what I mean? But
it wasn't functional.
No, it wasn't.
Right.
But one thing about me is I never didn't train. Like,
right.
I would always hit the bag, spar here and there.
Right.
Throughout my years of lifting. And what it did was it helped. It gave me an advantage. Now, it gave me a disadvantage with endurance. I'm going to put that out there. That's real. And it's been hard regaining my endurance, but I'm good. Like, I'm sparring 4 rounds. My fight is only 4 rounds. Mitch is the hardest shit for me.
Yeah.
And I go hard on mitts. I don't do the pity pat stuff that a lot of guys do now. So I do 4 hard rounds on mitts. I suffer through it with 30-second breaks.
Yeah.
So I'm good. I know I'm confident for the fight. I'm not worried about it.
Yeah.
But if I didn't have the muscle, I mean, I got way less muscle now. And the more muscle I lost, my endurance is better. And plus I'm running. I run, I swim, and I do my boxing training.
Right.
So that's all helping me. And I'm... Every time, I train multiple times a day, even with my skill work, just to keep getting fluid. I'm doing yoga, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm stretching. I'm doing everything to get my body. When people see me, when I go to different gyms, they think, oh, he's going to be slow.
Yeah.
He's going to be tight.
You get tired.
None of that shit, bro. So,
yeah, this is a lean down fluid version of yourself, which is interesting. And it's
I still
funny.
Got five hard weeks still of getting better, more loose and more lean. Yeah.
So it's funny. And to put things in perspective for the guys that aren't combat athletes, Greg, when he says he's hitting mitts and it's harder than the sparring, it's because it's forced output.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing for wrestling. And in wrestling, you know, when a wrestling practice, a hard drill session can be more demanding than an actual live go. Because guys, you're not forced to go offense, react. Like this is like an overhaul of hit mitts. You're not going to be able to hit a guy like you'd be
That's
able to hit
That's not
going to
happen in a real fight.
It's not going to happen in a real fight. You're not going to go like, boom, 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 20-punch combo because the guy's moving, slipping, and you're going to be hit back. So those mitt sessions and those pushes are like an overtraining scenario to where you can push yourself like hopefully you won't have to feel in a fight. But then on the other side, there's a type of fatigue that happens only in a combat situation. You're hitting harder. You're taking blows to the punches, so you need to do
it's
both.
It's hard to replicate, yeah.
Yeah,
but
you got
to do
what
you're trying
both.
To do in this preparation, like he's saying, he has 5 more weeks. You want to get yourself as familiar with discomfort as possible because the fight game is all about that. What can you do when your lungs are blown out, when your head's pumping, when your teeth hurt because you're fatigued? You know, that's when the real fight starts. And hopefully you won't get there in a 4-round fight. Hopefully you'll be able to push 4 rounds and go. But the only thing about being in great shape, and I'm always telling my guys this also, being in great shape means you can do more until you get tired, but you should try to get yourself as fatigued as possible in a 4-round fight. You could do a 12-round fight, you could do a four round fight. You should be able to do more until you get tired. That's what being in good shape. That's what being in good shape means. You want to be able to get yourself to fatigue, and by the time you get to fatigue, your opponent was already there and he's already crumbling for it.
Right.
And that's where the mental game starts, and that's where a guy like Mike, who has done things in a lot of different areas and understands the mental game, will win out.
Well, let me ask you this, because I've always wondered about this. Actually, you're probably both the best people to ask. So let's say it's November and you're like, okay, I'm going to take a fight in February. In that time that you're training, building up to the fight, sounds like sparring for the full rounds is incredibly physically taxing. Is there ever a time where you're actually going in and like doing an actual live fight in between that gap, or is that too big of a risk with the promotion that you might actually get hit type thing or injured or something like
that,
you know?
Well, I'll answer that from my standpoint. When you're preparing for a fight, there's no other way to actually get the feeling of a fight than live sparring. So, and these boxers do a lot of live sparring. And, you know, we take a look at some of this footage. Maybe we can pull some up, you know, for the folks to look at. But you have to simulate. What you do is you have bigger gloves. In a fight, the gloves are going to be smaller, even in boxing. So we spar with 16-ounce gloves sometimes, headgear, shin guards, elbow pads, knee pads, and you're trying to mitigate damage, but you have to simulate a fight scenario, otherwise you're going to be discomfort. There's nothing more embarrassing or more scary than being in a place where you've never been before in front of a bunch of people, hopefully – in this guy's case, millions of people watching at home on pay-per-view. Yeah, crazy. Yeah. You know, and you be in a place that you're not familiar with. You have to get that familiarity, but then we mitigate risk. If you're going with your training partner and you rock a guy, you don't go in and try to finish him and knock him out. You let him ease up. You touch the body, let him regain composure, or you know, there's smart training, but you have to emulate a fight. And so, you know, today was 6 rounds of sparring for my guys every Wednesday. And, you know, Cody did 1 round. He hurt his ankle. Josh asked for 7 rounds because he's in a 5-round fight. He wanted to do more and more round. And he kept the 16-ounce gloves on versus trading in little gloves halfway through because he wanted to hit hard. But it's all about emulating the discomfort and getting yourself ready.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with me, I've been sparring for a minute. Like, see on social media, I put – what I want them to see out there, you know what I mean? First of all, a lot of guys don't want, you know, footage of sparring.
Right.
Especially when they don't know me, you know what I'm saying? And you got to respect that, you know, it is what it is.
He's talking about his opponent, the guy he's
I'm practicing with, sparring with.
They don't want their stuff out
because
there.
Because you can look bad in sparring, but it's just sparring. And then some people get real silly with it or whatever. But... so I don't put a lot of that out there, you know what I mean? And I don't want my guy having a lot of tape on me, you know what I'm saying? I want them to expect I'm gonna be tight and slow, you know what I mean? So I don't put a lot of that out there. But I've been training for like 8 months, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But easing into the hard part, you know what I'm saying? So now I'm all in, I'm running, I'm swimming, and I'm training multiple times a day, right? So the sparring is, like you said, is very important. One thing that I've been doing is my coach, he's a fighter too, and he's big, so he'll put on the body pad, right, the body protector, and he has gloves on, so he's throwing punches at me, and I tell him hit me. I don't just fucking throw him, you know. And I'm using defense, and I'm just attacking his body hard. Way harder than I would sparring somebody.
Right.
An unrealistic situation, me throwing that many body shots. Yeah, and it fucking kills
me.
Yeah,
that's a rough one,
and
man.
In between rounds, it's 30 seconds. We only do 30 seconds. In my mind, I'm like, I need this.
Yeah.
I need this.
Absolutely.
I need this. You know what I mean?
And there's scenarios in a fight situation. It's happened to me. I fought a guy, Frankie... Signs is the guy's name, and I caught him with a left kick, like a switch left kick, and I caught him on the knee and wobbled him, and I went about a minute 25 trying to kill this guy. Punch, elbows in close, like just letting it all loose. And it's hard to push yourself in a practice situation where you're trying to actually kill somebody,
right.
And it ended up with me throwing him in a toss and landing on top, and he somehow survived that whole scenario, and I was so close to finishing him, but I was like, a fatigue that I hadn't been in a long time. Not since like, you know, an actual wrestling match where you're doing a minute and a half sprint with everything you got because you see the light at the end of the tunnel. And it was like, I had to recover, man. He came back and threw some punches, and then I looked like crap. I mean, I didn't like the way I looked, but...
So you were going guns a-blazing.
I was going guns a-blazing, going for that kill. And then what he's talking about there is just a dummy that you can hit and hit and fatigue. I mean, that's something you have to do.
Yeah, throwing hard, people don't understand, throwing hard shots and missing shots sucks the life out of you.
It's exhausting.
It's exhausting, yeah. But it's so... that's why I love training, because I know I'm getting better, you know? And... I'm literally in between rounds, like hurting, lungs burning, and like, I need this.
Yeah.
I'm good. Let's go. I need this. I'm testing my nuts, like see how much I got. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because I don't quit. Look, even when I was young, I remember I'd be in tournaments all over the country and in different training camps. My dad, you know, he had to work, so he wouldn't be there with me. But I know these coaches are going to report to my dad what I'm doing. So I will
I love the year 40 here.
Yeah,
and people reporting your pops. I like that connection there.
But I would no. I'm saying back in the day.
Oh, back in the day. I like his dad's like, hey, calling you, getting a spanking. All right, Mike.
Now, pops is still like, you know, he look at some sparring footage. He's like, I need better footwork.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I'd be like, all right. but they, you know, so what I would do, I'm like, they're not gonna tell my dad I'm quitting or this. So my whole thing, and I was in shape. I was always ripped. I thought I was big, but I wasn't, you know what I'm saying? Because I lifted.
Probably big for the age, yeah.
But no, I looked bigger than people I fought, and they'd be heavier than me. The muscles just looked bigger. But they would try to push me more because I looked in better shape, right?
Right.
I could tell they're trying to break me. And I used to always think, I'm going to have to pass out, but I'm not going to fucking stop. They ain't going to break me. I'm going to pass out. We used to do, I feel like sprinting uphill, like a half a mile, like a sprint, like crazy shit, you know? Push up, they would, and I can tell like certain coaches would be thinking of extra shit to make me do, mm-hmm. trying to like make me quit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I'm like, I ain't gonna quit.
That's it.
You know what I'm saying?
That's the mentality.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, I think one of the things that we talk about here is obviously the business side of things. We covered a little bit of that. What does the YouTube side of the business look like? I mean, I've got, you know, just my social media. I just do kind of on my own accord, not really monetizing. We've got Facebook, you've got all these different things. You've managed to create content on YouTube and make it a business. You've got so many views. What are we up to now?
Yeah, give them the stats. I think you got 1.7 million on Facebook, 72 million on YouTube, about 700,000 on Instagram.
That's impressive. People are interested in what Mike is doing. What's the business of that look like? Is that something that you've been mindful of? Did it just happen? Absolutely. Are you able to monetize it?
Yeah, I've been monetizing it for a while, since 2012 when I started YouTube. YouTube is just, it leverages the playing field. It gives everybody a shot to earn good money. You know what I'm saying? If people like your shit, you're good. If they don't, you tried, right? Mm. So YouTube is a space for amateur filmmakers to display their shit. You know what I mean?
Right.
So you don't have to have the people coming to me for advice all the time. They're like, well, I gotta wait till, I always tell people, start a channel. Oh, I gotta get a camera. Like, no, you got an iPhone. That's good enough. Some of my videos are with my phone. You know what I mean? People are not gonna be watching it like, oh, that wasn't framed correctly.
You know what I mean? Color grading is
yeah,
off.
Yeah, right. They just want good content. You know what I'm saying? It could be filmed with a potato. Good content wins. You know what I mean? Seeing with somebody like you, see, you have a built-in fan base because of all your years of UFC, mm-hmm. of mixed martial arts. So when you do a channel and really commit, it's easier for you. It should be easier
right.
for you.
You got a step ahead at
you
least.
You have the credibility of you being a professional fighter and being one of the best. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I tell guys all the time, I don't give a fuck how much money you're making. Start a YouTube channel.
Yeah.
There's some really rich people on YouTube, like silly fucking kids.
Yeah.
I'm talking about making stupid money.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I make good money on YouTube, but the thing about YouTube, what's better than the money that I get from it, is me being able to market my own products or products that I'm affiliated with to potentially millions upon millions
of
people.
Yeah, that's a bigger picture. That's
way bigger than
So what are some of those things, you know, we're always interested in. One of the reasons why you're on here is obviously, you know, we respect what you've done in just one area, but being a multifaceted guy, you're able to start businesses, have a presence where you're an influencer, you're an athlete in a bunch of different realms. You're a father. You're an inspiration. You've got an interesting story. What in that in those kind of situations has set you apart? Like, what is something that's a message you could give out to the folks listening at home that you know could set them on the same path?
I mean, since my introduction to social media world, I've been like, fuck the status quo.
Right.
Fuck your man-made rules. You know what I mean? I don't fit into boxes. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, people was bent out of shape when I first hit the scene. So what my videos—
Who was bent out of shape?
Like a
haters.
Lot of haters. Other people that was already doing the YouTube thing and the fitness thing. I wasn't trying to do fitness. I just happened to be in shape. I was a trainer. Yeah. I'm like, you know, I was doing videos for my clients at the time, and then I would put my videos up sometime, and people was really liking it. I wasn't trying to figure out the fitness world.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
You're just being you.
Just being me. And I've always been in shape. I've always worked out. Now, when I was doing just all weights, I was doing crazier shit than the average dude because I came from combat sports. And when you come from that world, the training is so hard. When it's just lifting weights, it was easy and boring.
Right.
So I would do crazy shit with my weights.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So people were like blown away. 200 rep sets, all kind of crazy shit, just pushing myself.
You're taking it to another level.
I need to feel fucking destroyed after a session. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Because it's like a waste of time if I'm not. I can't just go and just get some curls and I'm good. Like, nah. I need to feel wrecked. I always be like, I need to do shit that y'all can't do.
Absolutely. And those are guys that I was always pulling. We had a star of the kickboxer movie that was in here yesterday, and I had him teach a class at my gym. He could do some stuff that I know I can't do, and those are always people that you want to learn from.
Right.
And Greg, you know, obviously you chose Mike as somebody that you're like, hey, this fits our brand. This is the guy that we're looking after. What kind of things are you looking for when we're, you know, going after sponsorship athletes and guys that have influence? You know, somebody that you decide, hey, look, like, this is a guy that fits our brand, or what is the appealing thing so people can get both sides of the story? What he's doing, he's being himself and really putting it out there, trying to do things outside. And what do you see in someone like him that says, all right, this is someone we need to align with?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, one of the you were talking about themes that we hear after we have successful person after successful person in here, and I feel like something Mike does very well, and you know, a lot of successful people do, is, you know, he pulled up the Ali video. He's like watching that old footage. He's constantly learning throughout every area of what he's doing, and that allows him to scale his visibility on social media. That allows him to be a better boxer, a better bodybuilder, powerlifter, et cetera, et cetera. And him having that kind of, you know, we always talk about mindset. He's got that like growth mindset where, you know, I actually wrote an article for Entrepreneur Magazine about growth mindset. Like, that is the one thing that I look for above anything else with athletes, because they're going to be so much more effective when it comes to business or social media or whatever they're doing, because they're constantly focused on improving themselves, you know, improving the brands that they work with. You know, Mike's given me different ideas about Trifecta and the food,
the creativity.
Or, you know, he's got that like creative, growth mindset when it comes to everything. He's constantly, you know, learning, improving, et cetera, et cetera. And that's, you know, for us, we sponsor, you know, over 150 athletes and, you know, Hollywood celebrities at this point. And that's probably by far the number one thing, you know, I look for. I mean, there are people that, you know, we'll give them food for social media posts, but, you know, people like you two, obviously we've partnered with in a much deeper way, because I see that you've got that level of business savvy, that level of, you know, growth mindset that I'm like, okay, any effort I put into Mike is going to come back tenfold, because he's going to take that and run with it, you know,
right.
And that's
creating
really
value, master creating value, understanding, hey, no handouts. This is, you know, thanks for the opportunity. Now I'm going to prove it, and here's how, and being someone that does, you know, puts things into motion and understands the bigger picture. Let me ask you this, Mike, because it's obvious that, and I've been a guy that has had little successes, celebrate the success, and then it makes me think bigger myself, like, oh, wow, you know, I'm on TV all the time. you know, or I've won a championship, or I've done this, or whatever the little victory is, has made me think bigger. I've been in contact with guys that are, you know, like Joseph, that started when he's 9 and just having success, you know, went from 0 to being in a big show. I've met billionaires and got to pick their minds, guys that are self-made, guys that have turned things that are little into things that are big, kids that are on their deathbed from illnesses that are still inspiring. What are the big things that you're thinking of now? Because you've accomplished a lot. Now you're talking about you wanting to promote more MMA and boxing and learning that whole skill set. You've got your businesses that you're working at. Do you have entertainment on your mind? Do you want to keep doing what you're doing? What are some of the big things you're thinking of now?
First of all, I want to say this. I should have said this earlier. Congratulations for your Hall of Fame induction.
Oh, thank you. You know, appreciate it.
It's like I didn't know you. I mean, I knew who you were. I didn't know you personally, but I was like proud of you. You know what I'm saying?
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
What fight was that that they announced it? Was that New York?
I'm not sure, but it's funny because we're at Rob Dyrdek's house, and he was saying, his wife, they were watching the little piece they did to me, and she asked him, did he die? And Rob was like, no, they're inducting him in the Hall of Fame, and they did this cool piece where they're like, celebrate my career, and he was always this, but he even didn't, but it was like right. talking to me in past tense and everything. She's like, did he die? And he's like, no.
That's funny. Yeah. I feel like I was at whatever fight that they announced it. Maybe I was, I don't know. But anyway, yo, that's, I was like, you're just a consistent person and everybody loves you. And
thanks,
that's
dope. Man. I appreciate that.
But anyway, my big picture for me is nothing to do with business, bro. Like, honestly, I'm not even big on business. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I think I'm successful in business because I just do the right thing.
Passion. You're following your passion.
And I treat people good. You know, I'm loyal as fuck. And I do the right thing. That's it. So my ultimate thing is raising my kids, developing productive, good people.
Like
me controlling that. You know what I'm saying?
That's awesome. Mm-hmm.
And outside of that, like the people that follow me, for them that, I live like this, bro. I'm super motivated by death, by the fact that I'm gonna die. Right?
Yeah.
So what's ideal for me is like, this might be the last time you see me.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So for you to have a positive or a pleasant last remembrance of me, if I do die tomorrow,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Or tonight, or whatever. I don't want to die, but I'm just saying.
Well, I hate to break it to you, but you are going to die.
I don't want to die, but I'm just not.
Have you ever seen, what's the cartoon? The America, Team America?
Oh, yeah, Team
That's
America.
That's one of the funniest scenes ever, where the girl's like, listen, I can't sleep with you unless you promise me you'll never die. And he like flips her around and he's like, looks right in her eyes and he says, I will never die. And then it's a puppet sex scene that happens afterwards.
That's hilarious.
No, we're dying, unfortunately. Damn it.
Nah, but, you know, I just want to leave, you know, I'm not one of those people that have these big grandiose ideas of what life's about and all of this shit. I don't think life's about anything.
Right.
But being happy, right? So I think it's a little bit cooler when what makes you happy is making other people happy.
Right.
I think that's pretty cool. You know what I'm saying? And I think it's
that is
extra,
really cool.
I think it's extra cool when you can figure out a way to make life better for people like somebody like Elon Musk.
Right.
Like that's, you know what I mean? So other than that, just be happy. That's all I want to do. That's it. I don't have, you know, there's things that come at me like the whole boxing promotion thing. That wasn't a big plan. It wasn't a big idea.
Right.
But, you know, part of me wanted to be back involved with the sport again. Right. And like I go to every fight. I go to UFC fights too. Like I'm friends with Rumble. I'm friends with a lot of guys. You know
He's
what I'm saying?
He's a good dude, Rumble.
Good dude, man. Good dude. So I just love combat sports. I love whatever I love, and I always want to be a part of it. So that just happened. But with business, if something presents itself, or if I just have an idea, I'm like, yo, I think we could do this. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But I don't have this big what's
grandiose
next.
Grandiose idea
nah,
next.
Nah,
you're
bro.
Just doing you and loving life.
I just want to enjoy life. That's it.
Yeah, and feeding the next generation. That's really cool. People have asked me throughout my career, like, what's your motivation? What keeps you? You know, I've had a lot of ups and downs in my career. Win big fights, lose some big fights. You know, constantly getting back to the title shot and getting shot down or having success, whatever it is. And people ask what my motivation is, and my motivation is freedom. That means the ability to spend my time with people that I enjoy being around, with doing things I like to do that align with my what I'm about, with my passions, because so many people have to do crap they do not like to do in order to make a little bit of time and a little bit of money to spend some time doing some shit they like to do.
Right.
And yeah, that's about as ass backwards as I can think of the way to live life, you know? And it's not something that everybody's able to accomplish. How often does somebody get to hang out with your kids, be athletic, make fun videos that you're passionate about, and make a living doing it, right? Or Greg, you know, surround yourself. Greg keeps talking about, oh, when we get to this and that, we're throwing all these parties for the company, and we're going to do this, and we're going to, you know, building a culture that's fun and inspiring and about, like, having a good time. You know, that's, you know, we're on this planet, like you said, we're going to die, unfortunately. So why not make it fun and make it in you know, as involved with things that you love as possible, and keep on trying until you're able to spend all your time doing stuff you love. Doesn't mean you're not going to have to do some shit you don't like. Right. You may not like getting up at 5 a.m. and running a mile, or, you know, cutting out some sort of part of your life that isn't healthy, or, you know, but at the end of the day, we're just trying to have a good time and live a good life while we're here.
Exactly. And even that getting up at 5 in the morning, all that stuff, like, yeah, it's crazy because I try to be an example, like the ultimate example of whatever I'm a part of, whatever I do, right? So it's like this, like people that follow me, things that I want them to take away that I don't talk about is the fact that y'all think about it, right? And this is something, maybe I'll have do a video about this after like 5 fights, right? Like, y'all think about it. At 40 years old, with all kind of aches and pains, I was getting up 5 in the morning when it's dark, cold outside, out of my big ass nice house, leaving my road behind, like, you know what I'm saying? Getting out there and running, you know what I'm saying? Going, fighting young, strong dudes, you know what I'm saying? Doing all of this shit, right? And to do something that I love to do, right. I'm like, fuck it, I'm gonna just do it. And I'm gonna prepare myself, my body and my mind, to be able to do it physically and mentally, right? So it's like, you could do whatever the fuck you want to do.
Why can't you do something you want to do?
You know, and it's some people that, how the fuck do you get to do a pay-per-view fight, earn your way up? I'm like, hold on, little fella. Like, I'm creating a business opportunity for myself.
Yep.
And other people as well.
Anybody can do this. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to teach other guys how to do it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because people ain't thinking about that. They think you got to be Floyd Mayweather to get a pay-per-view fight. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If you let people tell you that, yeah. If you allow people to just, all right, I got you. You know what I'm saying? Sign your life away. Then, yeah, you got to wait, right? So I'm trying to empower people. I'm giving y'all power. Like, don't hate.
Yeah.
If you don't appreciate it, then go do your own thing.
Let my success and my forward thought motivate you.
And I tell dudes coming up, I said, bro, whatever I'm doing, you better do it better, because I'm laying this right here. You should be able to take what I'm doing and add on top of it and do it better. Right. You know what I'm saying? Because that's how just civilization and period, science, medicine, whatever, it advances from the people from before us. They get to a certain point. They may not be able to figure it out past here. Then we come like, oh, they didn't think. Just add this. Right. We're adding on to their ideas, their concepts, their business strategies, whatever.
Yeah, what do they say? All originality is borrowed, they say.
Exactly. So we all just adding on to whoever our predecessors are. So I'm just trying to give people, like, fuck it. Like, I operate on a certain kind of fucking frequency, bro. Like, I meditate, I eat once a day, I do all kind of weird shit that's good for me, right?
Yeah.
So, and how I feel is amazing. So it's just like when somebody drinking or smoking weed or whatever, they want the homies to feel it too. Like, hit that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't do that, but the things that I do, I'm telling people like, yo, fucking meditate,
get on the same level.
Hit the sauna, bro. Yeah. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm trying to share, like, trust me. Because you want that gratification of somebody trying your suggestion and being like, yo, that shit work.
Yeah.
You're like, yeah, that's what's up. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I just try to share good energy, man. Like, things that I found that kind of work for me. You know what I'm saying? That's it.
That's awesome. I think, you know, the ability to influence other people and get people motivated is a pretty powerful thing. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've been motivated by people that they don't know that they're motivating.
Yeah.
And I mean, even like a guy that was my boxing, like, he was the guy I watched, Roy Jones Jr. And to have a relationship with him now, I've met him, and him being a fan of mine is just shocking. because I used to carry around his CD when I first started my fight game.
You must have forgot.
And you all must have forgot that he put out himself. He did his own promotions, and I learned a little bit about his business. But I used to bring those DVDs and watch them on my away trips when I watch fights and get all myself all pumped and try to, you know, do the poor man's version of some of the shit he was pulling off and stuff like that. Now he and I are buddies, and I've got a chance to hang with him and learn from him. And it's cool to see the whole thing come full circle. Now I've met kids that are, you know, it makes you feel old sometimes, but they're like, I used to watch you as a kid, and I'm thinking, man, you're like 6'4",
right.
300 pounds. How are you, how are you that's a little cool, kid man. Watching me do my thing? But it's cool to be that guy and to know that you're doing it now and then be thoughtful about it and lead by example.
Right.
Is there anything you want to ask us? I mean, we've been kind of giving you the grind here, trying to get to know you.
Nah, more. It's all good, man. Yeah. I can talk with it. When I'm with good people, I talk my ass off. Some people, I'm just quiet.
Yeah.
They're like, you don't talk much, but good energy. We can sit and do this all night.
Yeah, exactly.
I got to get to the airport.
Absolutely. So, hey, guys. Hey, Mike, it's been super inspirational talking to you, man.
Pleasure, man.
I can't wait to see you do this fight.
Thank you,
bro. I mean, that's one of the things that people don't understand. One of the biggest fears in the world of just human beings, a physical confrontation with another person and public speaking, and you're, putting yourself out there in front of people to do both of that. So that's a testament to you already. Greg, awesome as always.
Yep.
Let's get back to business. I know you have some dollars to make, right? some checks to sign and whatnot. And make sure you tune in. Follow this man. It's Mike Rashid. How can they find you on YouTube? Same thing.
Just Mike Rashid on everything.
On everything. Yep. All right. This guy's an innovator, and he's a bad man. He looks the part and acts the part. Tune in next time. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Peace.